Welcome back to Radio EcoShock.
This is Radio EcoShock. I am your host, Alex Smith. Our guest is author, news hound, preparedness and psychology expert, and a part-time radio host, Carolyn Baker. She lives in Boulder, Colorado, and was there for the record-breaking flash floods in September 2013. Carolyn, this case of sudden floods in Colorado also reminds us there can be knock-on effects from climate-driven mega weather a year or even years later. In New Jersey, officials are now saying the huge fire that burned down that just-rebuilt boardwalk was likely caused by electrical systems damaged by Hurricane Sandy in 2012. And you have a similar delayed impact that you mentioned in Colorado. How did last year's giant fires affect possibly these recent floods?
Well, we have, there's been news footage on all of the major networks of land above Lyons, for example, up in the hills and above Fort Collins, where they had terrible fires last year. And, you know, the barren trees, the dead trees that are standing there that have been burned and charred, and there's no vegetation on the ground. And so this water could just come rushing down the mountain through the canyons into cities and on people's land. There's nothing to hold it back. And that is because of the terrible wildfires that we've had in the last couple of years. So it all works together. And I don't know what our delayed reactions here are going to be. I suspect we're going to have more wildfires next year. And this so-called 100-year flood or 500-year flood, you know, hey, that could happen next month. I don't know.
Exactly. We all don't know. It's one big experiment, as you said. And that widespread damage and the nearly impossible cost of rebuilding that we talked about earlier points us to a pathway of economic collapse. And in this scenario, we just keep getting hit with climate-driven disasters and other problems until we're far too broke and broken to rebuild. The roads don't get rebuilt. The bridges stay out. Some communities may be abandoned. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's absolutely true. And, you know, this is what I talk about all the time in the reporting that I do with the Daily News Digest and articles that I write and other people's articles that I have. And, you know, when I'm on Mike Rupert's show and we talk about, you know, we're looking at a collapsing culture, a collapsing society. This is the end of industrial civilization and its paradigm. And so it's very possible that we can have days like we had yesterday or the day before on Wall Street where, you know, they have record-breaking profits coming in. And, you know, and that's all going on in New York. And the rest of the country can be homeless and in tatters. That's entirely possible because that's where we're headed, you know, where we have the 1% controlling everything and the other 99% are in shambles.
Well, as you know, Carolyn, among those who believe collapse is inevitable, there's been an ongoing debate about how it arrives. One camp thinks we could see a rapid fall of the system any time now, and others see a bumpy downward slide over a decade or two. Who are some of the people in each position?
Well, Mike Rupert tends to believe that things are going to happen pretty quickly and that it's all very imminent. John Michael Greer is kind of on the other end of the spectrum. He thinks that things are going to go very slowly. He did write a book called The Long Descent. I'm very much, I think, in the middle of all of that. I see things as, yes, a roll down a bumpy hill, and then there are tipping points like the flood we just had last week, like these terrible fires and hurricanes and other natural disasters, the economic collapse of 2008, that push us over the edge of the cliff a little bit more. So it's a both and as far as I am concerned.
Right. I think about the $60 billion cost, allegedly, of Hurricane Sandy. That happened to states that are already really bankrupt. They just don't admit it. They keep taking from their pension plans or whatever they have to do to keep it all going. We've got a federal government that's, what, $15 trillion or more in debt, and they've just announced they're going to keep on printing $85 billion a month in phony money. So these costs as they come, the rising seas that come up and take away parts of the coastside and the ports, there's no way that this can just keep on going. Sooner or later, whether it's a bump or a crash, things are going to fall away.
That's absolutely true. There's no question. And we are heading for a society in which most of us, the 99%, you know, are, if not penniless, at least living very minimally because we don't have very much. Well, like I said, Wall Street can continue playing their game and doing their charade that they do, but as far as what we really have in the United States, it's going to be wiped out by these climate change events.
And for seniors in Poland, they just grabbed all the private pension money and took it for the government so they could continue to bolster their credit rating and borrow even more money. The same thing happened in Argentina. I expect to see that happen around the world. Wherever there's a little pool of money that people have saved up, they'll bail in, as they did in Cyprus, and take it away. And that's another reason we need food self-reliance, even for seniors, and more local communities, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I expect to see Cyprus-type events here. I think Detroit is a warm-up for that in terms of what they're doing with the pensions. You know, and that'll be a longer, slower kind of thing, but I think we're going to see Cyprus events where things are just grabbed overnight. So you better have some food to rely on, and you better have some networking going on with your neighbors and friends, and be making a community so that when this kind of stuff happens, you're not on your own and you can help sustain each other.
I'm Alex Smith with Carolyn Baker. Everybody should read Carolyn's article, All Dress Rehearsals Are Over, published from Boulder on September 16, 2013. It's powerful, and it inspired many of the things we're talking about today. You can find it at carolynbaker.net, and I'll put a link to it in my blog at ecoshock.info. And I also want to recommend this article, Paradigm Shifts and Tipping Points, Part 2, by Gary Stamper and Michael Wolff. It was published in Carolyn's blog on September 18th. And in Gary Stamper's blog, CollapsingIntoConsciousness.com. Carolyn, what is Gary contributing to this debate about how long we keep living these unsustainable lives?
Well, I think he's doing a lot of work similar to mine. He's putting a tremendous effort into his website, and he's been doing work with men for a long time and the integral consciousness, kind of in the vein of Ken Wilber. I think one of Gary's major contributions is he's helping us really look at the patriarchal system, the system that is based on power and control and male domination of things. And he's really helping us integrate the two energies, the masculine and the feminine, in order to create a new culture.
Well, men are still more or less controlling the world, and in certain parts of the world, they definitely control the world. So a change in men's consciousness is going to be important, and I feel just from my talking to men around me that it's possible the males will have more trouble adapting to the coming challenges than women will. What do you think?
Well, I definitely think that is so. One of the problems with men is the intellect, and of course we need the intellect, we need thinking, we need reason, but men have been so cut off by the culture from their feelings, from their hearts. I think that that's the major number that collapse is going to do on men, is it's going to drag them kicking and screaming into the emotions. And I really want to salute Gary for his work that he's done around that.
And despite what you read in some blogs, we're not going to shoot our way out of these problems.
We need networking.
We need cooperation. We need those things that, frankly, women have been better at developing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Also want to mention, since you're mentioning my work, I'm going to be in your neighborhood, Bowen Island, British Columbia, November 8th and 9th, doing a public talk and a workshop there. I'll be having details about that soon on my website and on my Facebook page and on Twitter, so just to let you know.
You've also got a book coming out in November. Tell us about that.
Yes. I had always wanted to write a book of reflections. You know, I've written these other two books on collapse, sacred demise, and navigating the coming chaos. So I was very inspired to write a book in which a person could pick it up and just read one page a day to inspire them as they go through this journey of this unraveling. and this uncertain future. So I submitted 19 essays to the publisher with 365 reflections, and they said, well, this is a very long book. It may present problems with pricing and translation, so why don't we cut it down to 17 essays, and then we'll create 52 weekly reflections in the hard copy book, and we'll put the rest of the reflections in an ebook. So that's what's coming out November 19th. It's called Collapsing Consciously, Transformative Truths for Turbulent Times. You can read more about it on my website.
You have a news service where you gather up some of the worst news in the world, the stuff the mainstream media just leaves out, and you also have positive solutions. But I know how much work that is. You're talking about coming books and past books. You're talking about public appearances and speeches. I know you do personal counseling. How do you survive knowing about the bad things that are happening? How do you do it personally?
Well, that's what all of my writing is about. It's about bringing together the dark, dark, dark side of our reality that we're facing, and then learning from that, using that as an opportunity to teach us about things like community, to teach us about compassion, to teach us about why we're really here, what is our purpose. What gifts did we bring here that we have to give to the rest of the world? And to stop getting, you know, stop the mindset of business as usual and, oh, I'm just living my life, to looking at the larger picture of what is going on and why did we come here at this time and what do we have to offer? What is our purpose? That's really what most of my work is about. It's not about making us feel good. I don't offer solutions because there aren't any solutions, but I do offer a lot of options and a lot of different ways that we can live our lives to make this not easy, but easier for ourselves and everyone else.
For me, I think it's partly a combination of curiosity about the future. This is a huge drama, one never before seen in history. I've read a lot of history. There's nothing like this, especially when we're talking about climate change and the energy picture as well. But it's also a deep emotion and feeling of love for my children and my grandchildren. I want them to do as well as they can, and I would like to kind of make up for the damage that my generation has done. So that's what motivates me. I'm Alex Smith. This is Radio EcoShock. We've been talking over lessons from the amazing Colorado floods with Boulder resident and longtime preparedness coach Carolyn Baker. You can get advice directly from Carolyn and get ready with her books at carolynbaker.net. Carolyn, thank you for joining us again.
Thank you so much for having me on the show, Alex.
Well, didn't it rain, children? God's gonna send the water from Zion. He's gonna raise his heaven up higher. It's gonna rain, it's gonna rain, it's gonna rain, children. God's gonna send the water from Zion. He's gonna raise his heaven up higher. It's gonna rain, it's gonna rain, it's gonna rain.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
My little hen, she's a rare breed. She only eats organic feed. No GMOs, no Frankenstein. Monsanto ain't no saint of mine. Cuckold hen, look and sing. Ain't laid nothing since the way that.
The last time we talked with Dan Imhoff, it was about the big dark images in the book CAFO, The Tragedy of Industrial Animal Factories. Now the co-founder, director, and publisher of Watershed Media is back with a more positive vision of where we could go, but it's not a book. His new album of songs is called Agraria. Dan, welcome back to Radio EcoShock.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Well, after 20 years of writing about food and the environment, where did this whole other talent come from?
You know, I've been playing music all my life. There was a time as a teenager I was really keen on music all through college. And then I kind of gave it up for a few reasons as I really focused on learning how to write and raise a family. And around 1995, I started to play the guitar again in earnest. And because I spend so much time during the day working on things of a technical nature, try to popularizing kind of technical, scientific, policy, etc., for the general audiences, writing songs became a real release for me. For some reason, I would often just, you know, as I was playing, come up with songs, because writing is what I do. And this kind of evolved very naturally as I got older and I got back into something that I was really, really interested in as a young person.
And are you living in California, Dan?
Yeah, I live in Northern California.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good spot for a lot of good music, too. Well, let's get to the title. What is Agraria?
You know, Agraria, to me, it's that ideal. It's this place that we're trying to become, where we are living in harmony on the land, and where all those great things that make humans great really are emphasized and come out. And for me, kind of food production, healthy food production, living in concert with the natural world, making music, eating well, all those things just are really the same thing to me. It's like the weeks roll into the months and the seasons, and you're just left with this process of tuning in and participating and trying to find out what's the best in you that you can share. And Agraria is this kind of, you know, ideal world that Jefferson hoped our country would have been built around, but it didn't go that way.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a little bit of the 1800s in that vision, but now we have to tune it for the fact that we may be using iPods as well, or some sort of modern technology.
Yeah, we're toolsy. We're toolsy animals. And our tools really define us, and they certainly have in agriculture and in the way we treat the land. I do try to write about that a fair amount. You know, I can't even get away from that even in songwriting. So I'm trying to just address this human condition that we have.
One of my favorite tunes on the album is a traditional one, but you added some lyrics, I think. I don't remember anything about GMOs in Cluck Old Hen. What did you do there?
Yeah, there are some GMOs in Cluck Old Hen. Cluck Old Hen, you know, I was learning to play the mandolin, and one of the exercises was this great old, you can either go minor or major. I went minor, so it's a fiddle tune, kind of ballad. And typically, in the traditional version, it's really about this old chicken that hasn't laid an egg in a long time. And, you know, I think that there's some sexual connotations in the old traditional versions of that song. And my producer, Matt Wright, who works here in Sonoma County, a great young producer, said to me, well, you have to write your own lyrics to this song. So being a person who writes a lot about agriculture and animal agriculture, I really wrote it about chickens and even, you know, the difference between a free-range and organic chicken and then the industrial chicken and then the millions and billions of chickens that we raise every year that we just grind up to eat.
Yeah, I think there's more chickens on the planet than there are humans by far. How would you describe a couple of the other songs? Would you introduce our listeners to maybe one or two other songs that are on this album?
Sure. You know, the first song, Compass, it's really kind of a ballad or a waltz, a country waltz, and it's about two young people. One is this pretty girl at a farmer's market, and she is attracted to this guy who's a cowboy, and they try to make this life together on the land, and it goes well for a while. And you know how hard it is. You know, probably farming takes more creative talent to not only do the production, but the marketing and make things go in this world. And so Compass is a song that the chorus is really about, you know, just whoever's out there who can give these young people some luck and some guidance and let them know that they're on the right track and they just have to stay with it. Give them this compass to keep them going in this worthy direction of trying to make a home on the land. That's Compass. And the beautiful thing really about making this record was working with so many incredible musicians. There are so many good musicians down here in Sonoma County, and every single musician on the record came from this county. They were pretty local. And then, there's another song called Tumbleweed. Tumbleweed is almost a bluegrass breakdown. It's very, very fast-paced, has banjo and fiddle. And it's really about the passage of time and, you know, how fast things are going. And then you turn around and you look back at the way that you thought things were going to go. And you just find that you're blowing along on the winds of time, like a ragged tumbleweed is the chorus on that tune. So, you know, the Agraria has a lot of things in it. It has country blues, it has ballads, and then it has some really, really high-paced dancing bluegrass tunes.
But, you know, it amazed me, I guess it shouldn't have amazed me, but it did, that this is no toss-off with a few kitchen friends, even though they may be your friends. The music's top quality, in my opinion, and the mixing and the production, this is a real, real album. So you're bringing out the idea of local music. I'm wondering, you know, as plants and ecosystems all grow up together, they form kind of a unique identity. Is that what's happening when you get musicians that are all from the same county to make an album like this?
Yeah, you know, the chemistry is important, obviously. The preparation is what's really important. I think when you're making a record, I'm not a pro myself, so I might play music, you know, 4 hours a day, 6 hours a day on a good day, you know, but that's not enough to be a top-rate musician. And so I worked really closely with the producer, and we did a lot of back and forth in arranging the songs and trying to figure out the parts and get the right people for the parts. And then when you're in the studio, you know, things are going really fast and it's not cheap. And so you want to know what you're going to get when you're in there. And you just want to be able to have fun and see if there's some great happy accident or just, you know, what comes of this chemistry that you're making in the studio. It's really, truly not different than farming or food production or communication, anything that I do. I mean, there's a lot of the more hard work that you do on the fundamentals, the better it pays off.
This is Radio EcoShock. Our guest is Dan Imhoff. That's Imhoff. He's the author of Food Fight, The Citizen's Guide to the Next Food and Farm Bill. Good for Americans to tune in to what's happening, or people all over the world to see what a farm bill should and should not be. He's also written Paper or Plastic, Searching for Solutions to an Overpackaged World, and Farming with the Wild, Enhancing Biodiversity on Farms and Ranches. Do you have another book in the works as you do all this, Dan?
I don't have another book in the work right now, in the works. I'm really doing small projects that I hope are going to turn into something much bigger. You know, I definitely am still ambitious. I want to keep pushing this idea of conservation-based agriculture, of farming that it farms with nature rather than against nature. It uses the natural cycles of the surrounding ecosystem sustainably, meaning it's not drawing too much of the groundwater. It's giving plenty of space for the fluidity of creatures and natural cycles to take place on that piece of land. And I do believe that that's the real future of sustainable ag. So I want to write about that. But, you know, I want to write fiction, and I want to continue the songwriting. So I'm trying to just let things go. I am working still a lot on this issue of confined animal feeding operation agriculture, so big industrial animal operations, and that's really taking the place of these campaigns. We're about to launch a campaign to ask Walmart to get antibiotics out of the meat that it sells, and if we can do that, it would be a real, real turning point for the way animals are produced in this country and in the world. And I'm just working on educating people on this issue of industrial animal ag, because in my opinion, it is the real big, difficult issue that we're dealing with in agriculture.
Well, and it's a tough one to talk about. You know, I've raised chickens and I've raised pigs, and I'm afraid to talk about it almost because it's so horrible what's happening to these animals, and they're smart and they're living and they deserve a life. So I think that's one of the barriers that you have to overcome, that people don't want to talk about it. They want to keep eating, but they don't want to know.
Yeah, they do. And we have to get better. I mean, look, we're on this continuum, we humans, with the animal world. And whenever I'm talking about this issue, I always start with the cave paintings of Lascaux and these absolutely gorgeous works of art that the early peoples, hominids, made, and this creaturely world that was just burning in their imaginations and allowed them to create these stunning works of art that we still recognize as some of the most beautiful things ever painted. And how we've come from that point, from that place where the creatures were all around us, to this place where the creatures are put inside these barns and they're completely almost invisible on the landscape, except if you happen to live in these rural areas, and the feed is trucked to them and the waste becomes this huge problem. There's this huge amount of healing that we have to get to. I'm finding actually that I'm more and more successful now if I just let industry talk for itself. So if you can match industry's words with the real pictures of what's happening, people get pretty angry and you know, people, they want to do the right thing. It costs money. It takes a lot of research and effort, and it's this huge issue. It is why farm policy is important and why I keep bashing my head against that, because it's going to take a huge initiative to make the changes that are necessary. It's going to cost money, and you know, the government has to step up and do its job and regulate properly. And we have to keep the pressure on, though, if that's what we want to happen.
Well, the other thing that will help is to have a more positive vision, and that's what Agraria is all about, I think. So can you tell us about some of the cool things that are happening in Sonoma County, California?
Well, it's hot down here. Boy, it's been a hot summer, and I think there's a lot of grape growers down here that are pretty happy. It's been a very, very good growing season. It's been a really good, decent season in the garden. I'm a small-scale farmer. But it's dry, and we desperately need rain. You know, Sonoma's a place where we've got mountains, we've got rivers, we've got oceans, we've got a really good climate. For me, I live in this land that I call deep craft, where, you know, there's a lot of fisher people and hunters. There's a lot of incredible garden farmers, and then there's musicians, and there's people trying to raise families and kids kind of as a community. And so those things all knit together, and it is a kind of a little agrarian paradise down here.
Okay, I'll move in. I'll be coming. not really. I think
it's probably great up there, let me tell you.
Everybody has to find their own place. I think that's how it works.
They do. They do, absolutely.
So how do people get this album, Agraria? Is it the usual outlets, or do you have other ways of getting it?
Yeah, you can go to CD Baby. You can go to Amazon. Definitely, you can get the hard CD or download it. You could ask your local record store to buy it. They'll probably still go to CD Baby to get the disc. And look online. There's a couple of YouTubes. You can hear some of it in advance to check it out. DanImhoff.com is another place to learn about the album and read the lyrics and the liner notes and things like that.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. You can find out more about Dan Imhoff, I-M-H-O-F-F, at watershedmedia.org or DanImhoff.com. And download links for this interview from my own show blog at ecoshock.info. Thank you so much, Dan.
Thanks a lot for the time. It was great talking to you.